We see today an unlikely victory. This is something that is really an extraordinary account here. You know, there was a kind of a pop song written back, I think back in the 1970s, You and Me Against the World. Well, this is kind of what this is with, you know, a man and his armor bearer, you know, Jonathan and his armor bearer. Really, really an amazing account here. And really, it's an amazing account of the power of God. Not the power of Jonathan, but the power of God, because that's really what's emphasized in this text. 1 Samuel chapter 14, we're going to begin reading in verses 11 through 23. When both of them revealed themselves to the garrison, now remember, just review just a little bit, as the chapter begins, we see the Philistines in great power harassing Israel, okay? More than that, we discovered that the Philistines deported all the blacksmiths so that Israel had no iron weapons, remember? Moreover, they had to go to the Philistines to have their farming implements, even their farming implements sharpened. So, you know, they're in a very sad state. Let me make sure that, there we go. The map turns on here. I'm going to need it in just a couple minutes. But they're in a very sad state. Last week, we saw Jonathan, whose actions and attitude really form a real contrast with Saul's. Saul's attitude was atrocious. Saul's attitude was, when he disobeyed, sorry, I got caught. This was very different from Jonathan. Jonathan had an attitude of trust. And we talk about trust and obey. We talked about that this morning as we sang that old hymn. And Jonathan was a man who trusted and obeyed. But the problem is, with Saul, his daddy, it was not the case. So you hear, like father, like son. Well, that's not always true. And in this case, it's not. And so here we have Jonathan on the move with his armor bearer planning an absolutely seemingly impossible attack on the Philistines, you know. And, you know, if God lets us know through this sign, you know, we can defeat them. I mean, you know, to me that is just incredible, incredible. So Jonathan and his armor bearer begin traveling to the Philistine garrison in Michmash. And remember now, we saw Michmash last time. Here's the Battle of Michmash. And Michmash is way up here. Remember, there was that rock protrusion in that valley that went between. And so this gives us a little bit of an idea. Michmash here on the map is way up here. And you can see it. That's just kind of an expansion of it. We have the rebellion of Saul against the Philistines there too. And anyhow, we'll see some of that later. But to give you an idea of where those places are and in relationship to like the Dead Sea and that sort of thing, that that helps a little bit with that map that's up there. So we saw the first several verses. Let's look at verse 4 of chapter 14. Between the passes by which Jonathan sought to cross over to the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp crag on one side, a sharp crag on the other. Okay, that's what I was showing you on the map a moment ago. Name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the one was Sanah. And then in verse 5, the one crag rose on the north, opposite Michmash, and the other on the south, opposite Geba. Then Jonathan said to the young man who was carrying his armor, "Come and let us go across to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few." And that is really the key statement in this passage. The Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few. In other words, God doesn't have to use a massive army to do what he wants to accomplish. He can just use two people, which he did. And, you know, in our own lives, so many times, and we talked about this last week, we limit God. You know, so we're willing to pray for something that we think God's capable of answering. But those things that we look at as impossible, well, that's impossible. God would never do that. We do that all the time. You know, my unsaved relative, I prayed for him for years. Well, that's not going to happen. So I won't pray with that about that anymore. Well, that's just foolish on our part. Because we understand that God is not restrained to save by many or by few. God's not limited by our limitations or by human limitations. He can do what he pleases. So when we go to God in prayer, we ought to go in confidence, believing that he can do whatever he wants to, what is his will. Verse 7, his armor bearer said to him, do all that's in your heart. Turn yourself. I'm with you according to your desire. I'm with you here. And then notice, then Jonathan said, behold, we will cross over to the men and reveal ourselves to them. If they say to us, wait until we come to you, then we will stand in our place and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hands, and this shall be the sign for us. So this is going to be the sign from the Lord. If they say, come on up, then okay, we'll go ahead and do it, and we'll do what we need to here, and God's going to give us the victory. And that brings us now to the passage beginning with verse 11, when both of them revealed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. The garrison. This isn't just, you know, a couple of guys up sitting on the rocks. The garrison of the Philistines. The Philistines said, behold, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves. Chuckle, chuckle, laugh, laugh, laugh. What a bunch of idiots. Aren't they foolish? They're coming out of the rocks and the hills. So the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up to us and we'll tell you something. Yeah, I bet they wanted to tell him something. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. And if you look at how absurd this situation is from a human perspective, it's incredible. They've got to climb up now to the garrison. Climb up the rocks. Then John, and I imagine, you know, two guys. You say, well, they could have taken an arrow and shot through both of them and killed them. Yeah, but do you really think they don't think they're a threat. They're probably thinking, we're going to toy with these guys. What a bunch of idiots. They don't know what they're doing. Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet with his armor bearer behind him. And they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer, put some to death after him. What one missed, the other got. That first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within about half a furrow in an acre of land. And there was a trembling in the camp, in the field, and among all the people, even the garrison. And the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked so that it became a great trembling. Now Saul's watchmen in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away and went here and there. Well, let's look at Gibeah just for a minute. They're looking on at what's going on near Michmash here. There's Geba. I can't see it from this angle. Sorry about that. But, Geba's here, Gibeah's down here, okay? So Geba's here, Gibeah's here. So they're watching, and they see, you know, they're watching up to the north there, and they see these people scattering and running. Pretty obvious here. You know, if you got an army, and then all of a sudden you see all these people scattering and running, it's a really bizarre sight to them to see this whole thing. I just lost my place here, moving away from the text. I'll get myself situated here in a minute. About 20 men within a half a furrow. Verse 15, there was a trembling in the camp. So God caused an earthquake, indicates the text. We'll see it in a minute. Verse 16, now Saul's watchman in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went here and there. They scattered. Saul said to the number, people who were with him, number now and see who has gone from us. He's thinking, something happened. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. And Saul said to Ahijah, bring the ark of God here, for the ark of God was at that time with the sons of Israel. While Saul talked to the priest, the commotion in the camp of the Philistines continued and increased. So Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. Then Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and came to the battle. And behold, every man's sword was against his fellow. And there was very great confusion. Now the Hebrews who were with the Philistines previously, who went up with them all around in the camp, even they also turned to be with Israel, the Israelites who were with Saul and Jonathan. When all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim heard that the Philistines had fled, even they also pursued them closely in the battle. So even those cowards that ran away suddenly were very bold. Isn't that amazing? So the Lord delivered Israel that day, and the battle spread beyond Beth-Aven. So, amazing account. We notice, first of all, in verses 11 through 14, Jonathan's demonstration of faith. And oh, what faith it is. Keep in mind that faith is not just something that's expressed by words. You know, love's that way too. Love is not something just expressed by words. It's actions. And faith is exactly the same way. Look at Hebrews chapter 11. Keep your finger here. We will be back, no question. Hebrews chapter 11, please. Very familiar passage to each one of us. Hebrews chapter 11 and noticing, beginning with verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he offered the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts. And through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. Next verse, verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken. Now, does it say here, by faith, he said this, but didn't do anything. By faith, he said this, but didn't do anything. No. Every time it's mentioned here, there is an action associated with it. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. And he was not found because God took him up, for he obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. So how did he demonstrate it? He looked pleasing to God. He demonstrated his faith. Verse 6, and without faith, it's impossible to please him. So we too need faith. And is that just something that we say? No, it's something we do. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and he's a rewarder of those who seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned by, and again, now it's Noah's turn, pointing out Noah's actions. Verse 8, by faith, Abraham. And what did he do? He demonstrated it, and so on throughout the text. So as we come back to 1 Samuel, we see that faith is demonstrated by what you do. And so we find that is true here as well. Jonathan didn't just say he was a man of faith. In fact, as far as I know, he didn't. He just did what he was, you know, he trusted and he obeyed, period. And even when it didn't make sense, he was willing to trust God and do what was right. He knew that God, you know, that he was part of God's chosen people. And that God had promised in the past, God had said that he would give them victory. God had said that he would protect them. So Jonathan's willing to take God at his word. That's what we need to do. We just need to take God at his word. When God tells us something in the Bible, we need to say, well, God says I can do it, I can do it. There has no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation make a way to escape that you might be able to bear it. Now, that way of escape doesn't mean that he's always going to pull us out of the trial. But it does mean that he'll support us in the trial, in the temptation, in the trial. So, folks, we just need to obey. This is who Jonathan was, a guy who trusted God and obeyed him. Notice, first of all, the taunt in verse 11 through the part of verse 12. When both of them revealed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, the Philistines said, "Behold, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves." Remember chapter 13 and verse 6? Look there for a minute. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were hard-pressed, then the people hid themselves in caves, in thickets, in cliffs, in cellars, and in pits. This is what they're talking about. Oh, they're crawling out of their hiding spaces, are they? It's an insult. It's an insult. They obviously didn't realize who this man was. So they assumed that these men were the deserters who had earlier hidden in caves and cellars and pits. So they no doubt are going to allow them to crawl up to them on the cliff. I mean, what threat is this to them? A garrison of soldiers and these two men, really? But these men were anything but deserters. But to these Philistines, this was a big joke to them. What a bunch of idiots, you know? So the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us. We're going to tell you, you know, we need to talk to you. We need to tell you something." But now, you see, they knew what God wanted them to do for sure. At least Jonathan did. Armor bearer followed him. And this sign communicated that to them. The English doesn't effectively communicate the taunt of the Philistines here. The NIV is better, but what they're saying is, come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson. Come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson. We'll give you a whooping. Get up here. And so we see now, number two, the fulfilled sign, the last part of verse 12. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel." Follow me up. I'm going to climb up. You follow after me. So notice it says, the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. Once again, this expresses incredible faith, incredible courage. Keep in mind that faith breeds real courage. Faith breeds real courage. Courage without faith is nothing but foolhardiness. So you see, this isn't foolhardiness. This is based on this man's faith. Let me ask you a question. Are you a person of faith? I know that terminology is used in our day. Oh, we're people of faith. Well, that just means we have some kind of form of religion. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you the question, are you one who really trusts God? Here's one test. Prayer shows faith and dependency. Now think about that. If you are not a person of prayer, you're not a person of faith. Because what, in essence, what you're saying, what I'm saying is, when I'm not as faithful to prayer, you're not as faithful to prayer, what we're saying is, I can get along today without God. I can do it myself. Lord, I'm good today. You just go ahead and whatever. I'm good enough. What arrogance. That is not faith. That is not being a person of faith. Also, never be afraid to do whatever God has called you to do. No matter how ridiculous it may look to others. You know, when I entered the ministry, to some in my family, it was a ridiculous thing. Why wouldn't you want to become a doctor? Because God didn't call me to be a doctor, that's why. I enjoyed science. I enjoyed that type of thing. I enjoyed, you know, medicine, and had thought even at one time about veterinary science. But you know what? If God doesn't call you to do it, then you shouldn't be doing it. What you do in your life right now as a believer, or are you doing something in your life right now as a believer, or facing something, maybe I should say, in your life right now as a believer that seems impossible? Maybe you're having trouble trusting God with it. You know what? Trust and obey. Trust and obey. It's just too big. I can't trust God with it. I've got to worry about it. Oh, that's going to help, right? Oh, I've got to be flustered about it because why? Can't we just give it to God? It's all right to rest in God. I think sometimes we're afraid if we give it over to God that maybe God's going to think I'm not real serious about it because I'm trusting him with it. No, just trust him with it. Give it over to him. And notice what it continues, the text continues here, verse 12. Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. Notice that Jonathan does not say, the Lord has given them into our hands, but the hands of Israel. Once again, Jonathan recognizes God's covenant promises to Israel. That's the basis of this. It's not that I'm a tough guy. No. He knows we're God's people. God has promised he's going to support us. If he lets me know through this sign, I'm going because I trust him. What a guy. Incredible. Incredible faith. Oh, that we would have just a little bit of Jonathan's faith. And then we see number 3 in verses 13 and 14, the incredible slaughter. Verse 13. Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet with his armor bearer behind him. Now get the picture, okay? So here he is. He's scaling the side of the rock here. However high it is, it's obviously some bit of a distance there. His armor bearer is behind him. You know, I mean, they could kick him down. They could chop him up as they come up. They could hit him with arrows. They had enough people to do that. But they let him come up. Why? Arrogant. Arrogant. Arrogant, arrogant people. They can't defeat us. See what pride does? It opens you up. Talk about pride going before a fall. It's no question here. Climbed up on his hands and feet with his armor bearer behind him, and they fell before Jonathan. So Jonathan gets up, starts swinging his sword, and people are dying left and right. The soldiers are going down. And whatever he misses, his armor bearer comes up and cleans the job, does the rest. Amazing. And his armor bearer puts some to death after him. What a surprise to the Philistines. They weren't expecting this. Jonathan and his armor bearer climbed up to the outpost, no doubt a difficult climb, and began the slaughter. Imagine the shock of the Philistines. And we see it here. Against all odds, and after a difficult climb, they had plenty of strength to exterminate a squad of Philistines. I'd be out of breath. I don't know about you. Be like, oh, give me a moment before I start talking. before I try to exterminate you. No, they had, and again, this is supernatural here. God was with them. Jonathan led the slaughter, and his armor bearer finished the job behind him. Verse 14, that first slaughter, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, was about 20 men within about half a furrow and an acre of land. So there would be more slaughter later. More Philistines would die. But notice, about 20 men within about half a furrow in an acre of land, they were outnumbered at least 10 to 1, at least. And they quickly slaughtered 20 soldiers. And, you know, these weren't just civilians. These were soldiers. These were fighting men. And they slaughtered 20 of them. Also, this slaughter took place on a relatively small tract of land. Thomas Constable writes, quote, half a furrow of land, verse 14, was half a parcel of land that a yoke of oxen could plow in one day. So that's, you kind of get the idea. Remember what I said last week, you and God make a majority? Well, this is a good example of that. You and God make a majority. No doubt about it. One author wrote, the plan succeeded only because Jonathan had the courage to determine the will of the Lord and to follow it. Let me ask you a question. Do you have the courage to determine the will of the Lord and then follow it no matter what the cost? As believers, that's what we ought to be willing to do. But are we doing it? Are we doing it? Are we obeying? Are we trusting? Are we obeying? So first of all, we saw then the taunt. Verse 11, first part of verse 12. And then we see the incredible slaughter. But notice God's intervention now in verses 15 through 23. God's intervention. Notice. And there was a trembling in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. Even the garrison and the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked so that it became a great trembling. So first of all, the trembling in verse 15. The translation of the New English Translation, the NET Bible, is helpful here. Listen. Then fear overwhelmed those who were in the camp, those who were in the field, all the army in the garrison and the raiding bands. They trembled and the ground shook. This fear was caused by God. So they see this as some divine, you know, they don't know what's going on, but they are scared to death now. One guy comes in with his armor bearer, slaughters 20 of them, and now there's an earthquake, and they are frightened half out of their minds, and they're scattering everywhere. So here we see God sending an overwhelming fear and an earthquake. God sent this panic wherever the Philistine army was located, in the field, at Michmash, in one of the raiding parties, and at the various outposts. They were frightened out of their minds. Notice that God made those who should have been afraid bold, and those who should have been bold afraid. Isn't that interesting? It's just the opposite. And God can do that. Those doing God's will, though, should not be afraid. A lot of times there is great fear in witnessing for the Lord Jesus. And instead of sharing the gospel, we kind of back off because it's scary. And, you know, we're kind of worried, what are they going to say about me? What are they going to do? How are they going to react? And so there's a tremendous fear in witnessing. But folks, we just need to obey God and trust Him. Those outside of God's will should fear, no matter how secure they seem. But those doing the will of God should never fear, but just trust Him. Then notice the discovery in verses 16 and 17. The discovery. Now Saul's watchmen in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went here and there. The New King James says, Saul's watchmen at Gibeah in the territory of Benjamin looked on as the crowd of soldiers seemed to melt away, first in one direction and then in another. They scattered everywhere. It's like here they were, and then where did they all go? Imagine the lookouts. Here they are looking that direction, and all of a sudden they're melting one direction and another. You know, they're concerned they're going to attack us at any moment. But there they are, groups of soldiers running, scattering. Verse 17, and Saul said to the people who were with him, number now and see who's gone from us. And I'm sure what Saul is thinking of, there must be a band of soldiers out there somewhere, you know, attacking them. You know, we must have some great warriors out there attacking them right now. He didn't expect, I don't think, there's going to be two gone. One's my son, and the other's the armor bearer. So here's Saul trying to figure out then if a group of his men is responsible for this mass retreat. But imagine his surprise when he learns it's two guys, and one of them is his son. How many were involved in this rout of the Philistines? Oh, two. Two are gone. Wow. And then the reaction. In verses 18 and 19, then Saul said to Ahijah, bring the ark of God here. For the ark of God was at that time with the sons of Israel. Apparently, the ark was brought to Gibeah temporarily. Chapter 7, verse 2. As Israel did in earlier chapters, I think that Saul was using the ark as a good luck charm once again. It wasn't that Saul was interested in obeying God. It's that he wanted to win, and he saw the ark as a good luck charm, or as a, you know, rubbing the genie's bottle. I mean, that's kind of how Saul treated God. Maybe Saul even wanted to carry that ark into battle with him and use that as, you know, thing that was going to defeat him. But two people. Why did he need a magic charm? He just needed God. Verse 19, while Saul talked to the priest, the commotion in the camp of the Philistines continued and increased. So Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. Dr. Constable again. As Saul watched, the multitude of Philistine soldiers that covered the area began to dissipate. He evidently concluded that he did not need to seek the Lord's guidance or blessing. As the priest was performing the required rituals with the ark, Saul decided that because the commotion among the Philistines continued to increase, I don't need the ark any longer. Look at his attitude. All he's worried about is what works. There's a lot of Christians like that today, honestly. We're going to build our church this way. Why? Because it works. I want to follow the principles of church growth. By the way, those principles, a lot of them have failed already, and those churches are, those big churches from back in the 90s, early 2000s, they're gone now. How many times do you hear about Bill Hybels anymore? Not me. Or some of these other people with these tremendous church growth churches. People got word what was going on in those places. But you see, they didn't need some kind of magic charm. They needed God. They needed a relationship with God. Saul's got it all wrong. And so Saul figures, well, things seem to be going our way. Never mind. We don't need to consult God anymore. Again, using him like a magic genie almost. And Saul once again really reveals here how low his character is. This demonstrates that he was just using the ark superstitiously. He was apparently not serious about seeking God's guidance or blessing. So many people use God as a lucky rabbit's foot when they get into trouble in the same way. I've met a lot of Christians this way. They get very, very spiritual when their marriage isn't going well. They get very, very spiritual when it's not going well financially for them. They get very, very spiritual, and fill in the blank, when their kids aren't doing well, whatever it may be, and suddenly they're very, very spiritual, but when things begin to go their way, suddenly they're not at church anymore. Suddenly they're not reading their Bible. I've seen it again and again and again. God's my lucky rabbit's foot. Just need to rub that rabbit's foot and everything will go well. And then when things are going fine, I don't need my lucky rabbit's foot anymore, and so they ignore God. There's many Christians who do this, and it's wicked. God doesn't want to be used. He wants a relationship with you as a believer. If God works, I'll use him. If not, forget it. Many Christians that way, too many, at least professing. Sometimes you wonder if they really know Christ. And then we see the deliverance in verses 20 through 23. Then Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and came to the battle. And behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was very great confusion. So they found the Philistines in complete panic mode, killing each other with their swords. They didn't even know what they were doing. They were out of their minds. Out of their minds with fear, verses 21 and 22. Confusion. Pandemonium. Now the Hebrews, who were with the Philistines previously, who went up with them all around in the camp, even they also turned to be with the Israelites who were with Saul and Jonathan. When all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim, now they're coming out of their holes, heard that the Philistines had fled, even they also pursued them closely in the battle. Those Israelites who were mercenary soldiers, verse 21, or deserters, verse 22, turned on the Philistines and joined in attacking them. Isn't that interesting? When things were going well, they were, you know, fair weather friends. Oh, things are going well, I'm with you. Things weren't going well, I'm out of here. It wasn't real trust in God among God's people. Most didn't trust God. A small contingency of men did. Very few compared to the others who hid, or the others who wanted to do it for money. Verse 23. So the Lord delivered Israel that day, and the battle spread beyond Beth-Aven. The Lord delivered Israel that day. Sadly, things would have been different in chapter 31. We won't do that right now. So things would be different in chapter 31 and will be. We will see it. In fact, why don't we go ahead? Go ahead and look at it for a minute. Chapter 31. And notice verse 2. The Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. So things were going to be different. They're not always going to be defeated. They're going to have the upper hand here, we find later on, unfortunately, in chapter 31. Understand that God is the one who brings victory. We can't claim anything more than Jonathan and his armor bearer could. We just need to trust the Lord and follow him. And the battle spread beyond Beth-Haven. The army of Israel was not satisfied until they drove the Philistines some distance west of Bethaven. Now notice on our map one more time before we close here, Bethaven. So they, if it's on here, I think it is. Again, let me step down here. Bethaven, is it on the small one? No. Should be here. Beth Shemesh. Nope, I don't see it right now. I'd probably have to move the map down and search for it there, but they drove them far anyhow. They definitely drove them far. Well, let's go ahead and close then this morning. And as we close, folks, and we see an unlikely victory here, and it all took place because there was a young man and his armor bearer that said, we're going to trust God. We're going to stand up and we're going to do what's right. How about you? How about you now? Are you going to be an individual that says, I don't care what anybody else does, I'm going to follow Christ. I'm going to follow the Lord. I'm going to walk with Him. Others that I may know may not be. Maybe others in my family or others in my circle of friends, whatever it may be, but I'm going to live for Christ. Are you willing to stand? Are you willing to trust God? Are you willing to obey Him no matter what the cost is, just as Jonathan did?